Good morning to our students at our remote site, Radiance. I understand you're actually dialed in live this morning, so feel free to call in and ask some good questions. Okay, so this morning I would like to begin chapter 7 in the book, which kind of changes directions a bit and talks about ways to improve the estimates of a spectrum. And it's not, there's some, a number of adaptive filtering or adaptive signal processing textbooks seem to include this kind of material, but this is more, I would say, basic DSP type material. And we're going to touch on a couple topics in spectral estimation, but the process of estimating a spectrum is really more in the realm of pattern estimation, I would say, these days, since it involves essentially ways to estimate parameters. But today we're going to talk about something called periodograms, which is a concept that on how to improve the estimate of a spectrum given set of data. We will then sort of show how this leads to the concept of time domain windowing, which you should be familiar with from your DSP courses. And we're going to talk about one window, well, two windows really, the Bartlett window and Blackman-Tukey approach in particular, but we won't talk about all the different kinds of windows. Again, I'll assume you've seen that in your DSP classes. If you haven't seen that in your DSP classes, email me and I can point you to my DSP lecture notes where we talk about that kind of thing. And then we'll end talking about the Blackman-Tukey approach, which is really just another view of time domain windowing to compute the spectrum. The goal in the focus today is going to be more on issues like the bias and variance in the spectrum rather than just the technique itself, since you've seen these techniques before and you've discussed things like the implications of these things in the frequency domain. So, let's recall that the power spectrum of a zero mean stationary signal, X of n, with autocorrelation, R of n, is defined by the Fourier transform of the autocorrelation function. Let's review why are we so interested in autocorrelation functions as a way to estimate the spectrum of a signal. Why are we so interested in the autocorrelation function? Is the autocorrelation function a one-to-one mapping to the signal? Is this spectrum that you get, RV of j omega here, is this the same spectrum that you would get if you computed the magnitude, the spectrum of the signal? We have one person shaking his head yes. The other three are refusing to answer in class. What is the answer is no. What is the difference between this spectrum and the spectrum of signal? The autocorrelation represents a representation of the signal where there is some loss of information. Which information do we lose?
Phase.
The phase. This is a zero, this is a minimum phase representation of the signal. So if we're just interested in things like the magnitude spectrum, that's fine. If we're interested in estimating properties of the signal related to phase, that's not fine. So that's one reason that we're interested in the spectrum as computed by the autocorrelation function, when we're primarily interested in the power spectrum or the magnitude squared spectrum. But there's another reason which sort of relates to noise. Why does the autocorrelation function sort of have this desirable property when we talk about signals plus noise. So if I have a signal X of N and I add noise to it, I have additive noise, and that additive noise is uncorrelated with the signal, what happens when we compute the magnitude spectrum? Seeing some blank stares this morning, which probably means you haven't woken up yet.
It becomes constant.
So one of the key, the reason I'm belaboring this point this morning is that if you don't understand this issue about why we prefer correlation functions to the signal itself in the presence of noise, you're not going to have a good appreciation for why we want to actually compute things like the periodogram. If I just give you one finite set of data from the signal, and you know that that signal is contaminated with noise, and you compute the spectrum from that data, how much faith can you put in to the result that you receive? The noise is random, which means there's some possibility that the noise could have taken on very large values when you compute that spectrum, which means the spectrum that you get, there's some probability that that spectrum is garbage, that that spectrum has been dominated by the noise. When we have additive noise, we prefer to work with correlation functions because if the noise is white, that tends to reduce the effects of the noise. If we have a signal plus noise, and the noise is uncorrelated with the signal, when we take the autocorrelation function, the cross terms cancel, and we're essentially left with just the power of the signal plus the power of the noise. And the power of the noise we can often estimate using some heuristics or some knowledge about the application. So then that allows us to have a good estimate of what the power of the signal is, and we can sort of remove the effects of noise. So correlation-based processing is synonymous with additive noise. And that's the other reason why we use this approach. So our concern in this chapter is how to estimate the spectrum of X of N from more than one finite set of data. If you're only looking at one set of data from the signal, you have no real way to estimate the impact of the noise on that measurement. However, if we have multiple sets of data, we can average successive estimates to obtain a better estimate of the data. Now, you might ask, suppose I give you 1,000 points of data, why not just compute a spectrum based on those 1,000 points of data? And that's the best that I can do. Well, we will show today that there's actually other ways you can process those 1,000 points to get a better estimate of the data. Now, methods of estimating the spectrum are divided into two general categories. Classical, these operate as non-parametric estimators and do not impose any model or structure on the data. The Fourier transform, for example, falls in this category of classical estimators. It operates directly on the data, and it computes the spectrum without applying some kind of smooth spectral model like a linear prediction model or some such thing. The modern approach is assume a model structure for the observed data and estimate the parameters of that model. And we're going to spend a lot of time in the second half of the semester looking at what amounts to model-based approaches. There are a wide variety of model-based approaches. But you can think of this, one of the simplest of these that we've already discussed is the linear predictive model. Using the linear predictive model, we can compute an estimate of the spectrum. And in some cases, that estimate of the spectrum will be better than the estimate that you get from a Fourier transform. Today, however, we're going to talk mostly about the classical techniques.
Now, even if you can constrain yourself to the estimates of the spectrum using the autocorrelation function, we've also discussed how there are many different ways one can compute the correlation function when you have a finite amount of data. And one of the ways that we can do this is we can actually estimate the magnitude squared of the magnitude squared spectrum of the signal, computing that from a Fourier transform, and then we can average, or we can take the limit of that spectrum as the window goes to infinity. Spectral estimates derived directly from the data are known as periodograms. Those derived from the autocorrelation function are known as correlograms. And we'll talk about both of these today a little bit. But it might strike you as odd that if I give you 1,000 samples of the data and you compute a Fourier transform of that signal based on those 1,000 samples, you might think, well, that's the best that I can do. The spectrum that I get from those 1,000 points would be the most accurate spectrum that I could get. But in fact, when the signal's contaminated with noise, there are ways we can take the 1,000 points of data and reduce the impact of the noise within those 1,000 points. And that's essentially what we're going to talk about today. And the reason we can do that is because with the techniques we're using, try to essentially reduce the effects of noise by doing some form of averaging and making use of the long-term statistical properties of the noise. So the modern approaches, which are based in statistical parameter estimation theory, these essentially, why these have become so popular is because they make use of every bit of information we have about the problem, whether that be statistics of the signal, statistics of the noise, or some kind of knowledge of a priori values of the signal or noise or that kind of thing. You can throw all that into a common framework and then do essentially an optimal estimate based on that information. The techniques we'll describe today, such as the periodograms, are sort of a crude, very crude way of doing, of making use of some knowledge about the problem, mostly in terms of knowledge of the statistics of the signal. So let's first talk about the periodogram. The periodogram estimate of the power spectrum is defined as what the autocorrelation function R sub t of E of j omega, it's a function of frequency, is equal to 1 over m times the magnitude squared of the Fourier transform of the signal. So we have the sum from n equals 0 to m minus 1 of x of n e to the minus j omega n. We take the magnitude squared of that sum, and that gives us an estimate of the power spectrum of the signal, which we're going to call r sub p of e to the j omega. Now you'll notice that because we're taking the magnitude squared, we're throwing away the phase information. But for a large class of problems, the phase information is not that important. In general, in digital signal processing, interpreting information about the phase is rather difficult. And you may recall a topic called phase unwrapping from your DSP course. But if you've ever tried to deal with phase in the discrete domain, you have to do some work to make the phase meaningful, and that's why over the years a lot of applications have not focused on the phase. So we can also write this as R sub p is equal to 1 over n times the magnitude squared of x of e of j omega, where x of e of j omega is defined as the Fourier transform of the signal. Now, there are many ways to estimate the autocorrelation function. This particular estimate that we're showing here can be rewritten as the sum from m equals minus capital M minus 1 to m minus 1 of a quantity we'll call r primed of m e to the minus j omega m, where r primed of m is just the sum of 1 over m times the sum from n equals 0 to m capital M minus m minus 1 times x of n plus m. This is a familiar estimate of the autocorrelation function, this expression for r prime to m. We have talked about the bias of this estimate, and we'll comment on that in a moment again, but we've also talked about different ways we can actually compute this correlation function from a finite set of data. And all of them produce results which are fairly close, but some have bias, some don't. But we can write the spectrum of the the Fourier transform of the autocorrelation function, we can write that in terms of an autocorrelation sequence. Now, the autocorrelation sequence, what are some of the properties of that sequence that are important to us? This autocorrelation function, as we define it here, has several properties which are very important to us. And you'll notice that this r prime of m is not equal to x of m. These are two different signals, essentially, though they have a common spectrum as estimated through the autocorrelation function. So, first of all, the r prime of m, is this an even or an odd function? What is an even function? What is the definition of an even function?
Fx equal to f minus x.
Minus x, yeah. Right? The positive going portion of the waveform is equal to the negative going portion of the waveform. Is this an even function?
Even function.
Autocorrelation function is an even function. Was the original signal an even function? Not necessarily. So by discarding the phase, we go from a function which was not necessarily even to a function which was even. This is also a minimum phase function. What does that mean in terms of the shape of the autocorrelation function? What is the signature of a minimum phase signal? What does it mean in the time domain for a signal to be minimum phase? Autocorrelation function is minimum phase, which means that it's maximally concentrated around time equals zero. So autocorrelation functions have this property that their amplitudes decay as a function of time. They're shaped like this. And that's because, essentially, by discarding the phase of this signal, we're forcing this into a minimum phase representation, which means we're concentrating the energy of that signal around time equals zero. So this autocorrelation sequence is much different than the signal that we started with, but they share the same magnitude spectrum. And it's important to remember the distinction between these, because if you're working in an application where phase makes sense, like, for example, time delay estimation or things like that, you have to be a little bit careful about how you use these correlation functions. Now, we've previously shown that this is a biased estimate. This equation shows us that the periodogram is simply the Fourier transform of the biased correlation estimate r prime of m. But we've also shown that r prime of m is itself biased. Earlier, we derived an expression which showed that the expectation of r prime of m is equal to capital M minus the absolute value of M over capital M times R of M. And what this means is that if we take a if we generate data for a signal whose spectrum we know the underlying spectrum, and we estimate that spectrum from a finite set of data, the estimate for m points of data, that estimate, if we take the expectation of that estimate, for example, we take m points of data and we take those m points at different points along the time axis for a stationary signal, and then we take the expectation, we average together all those different estimates, we know that there'll be a slight bias in those estimates, which is related to the number of points m. So technically this is a biased estimate, but the good news is it's also asymptotically unbiased, because as m goes to infinity, this converges to 1, and our expectation of r prime of m is equal to the true spectrum r of m. So that's not the worst of things. And in fact, this bias, knowing this bias, we could actually pre-multiply by this bias to make it go away. So it's not the worst kind of thing. But in this course, we worry about things like bias and consistency. So we can also look at variance. The periodogram is not a consistent estimator. Now, we're going to hear that term today, and we've touched on this briefly. What all this really means is that increasing the number of data samples does not decrease the variance of the estimator at any one frequency. If an estimator is consistent, you would expect, as you increase the number of data points, the variance of the estimate would go down and eventually go to zero. That's a very important property of an estimator. We will show today that estimates of this, that this estimator, the variance of this estimate does not asymptotically go to zero as we increase the number of points. And that will lead to the development of alternate techniques which do have the property that, in addition to being asymptotically unbiased, they're also consistent. Now, analytic evaluation of the variance is difficult in the general case, but we can demonstrate experimentally how this works. I'll show you an example in a moment. And we can also show that for a simple case, analytically we can demonstrate that the variance is not consistent. And that sort of becomes an existence proof. We can show one simple case for which the estimator is not consistent, which means for the more general cases, it's definitely not going to be consistent. And then once we've done that, we will define some techniques which attempt to mitigate that problem. We're having problems today with the, you know, I think, I don't know what version of the software he loaded, but my equations aren't showing up. Okay, there they are now. The magic of PowerPoint. Okay, so we're back. For the remote viewers, we were having trouble getting the images to render, but it looks like it's okay now. So let's first look experimentally at the evidence as to what the fact that this estimator is not consistent. So if we consider a simple autoregressive process, we have white noise applied to a filter that has a simple transfer function, xn is equal to 0.9 xn minus 1 plus w of n. So this is just a first order moving average filter. It's a first order autoregressive filter. So we can generate 1024 samples of the sequence at a specified signal to noise ratio. And we get a plot showing something here. So you've got this rather random looking signal, and the question is, you want to sort of compute the spectrum of this signal, which we know to be of the, defined by this polynomial 1 over 1 minus 0.9 z minus 1. But if you take, if you simply take the Fourier transform of this sequence, well, if you include all 10,024 points, you're going to get something which looks very noisy like this, right? Now, when you look at this, if I gave you this picture, and for the remote viewers, we're talking about picture C on the right. If I gave you this picture and asked you to give me a model of that system, you would be very hesitant to tell me that the model is just 1 over 1 minus 0.9 z minus 1, because you have all this noise in this estimate. Now, if you had a background in pattern recognition, on the other hand, you might say, well, the best thing to do is to choose the simplest model, Occam's razor, and the simplest model might be to draw a trend line through this noise and smooth it. And that's essentially what smooth spectral estimates do. But what we want to consider today is the fact that this picture is not a good representation of this model. And are there things we can do operating directly on the data to make that picture better without having to assume something like an all-pole model? Well, if we take compute a spectrum from 32 points and 128 points and 1024 points, you get the three plots shown here on the right. Now, the first plot, you say, well, that looks pretty smooth, but of course, that's only using 32 points of data. So the smoothness is not because the model's better, the smoothness is because it's a very crude Fourier transform estimate. If you increase the number of points to 128, well, now the model gets a little less smooth, and if you go all the way to the limit of 1024 points, the model is very unsmooth, but this ripple effect you're seeing is more a function of the windowing effects of the FFT than it is of the actual signal. So if you look at a particular frequency, for example, if you look at this frequency close to 250 where you see this null, and if you collected all these three data points, and suppose you actually did this FFT from 1 point to 1024 points, so you actually had 1024 estimates, and you collect the data at this frequency slightly below 250 where we see a zero in the spectrum for part B, and you look at that sequence, what you'll find is that sequence, the variance of that sequence does not decrease as you increase the number of points, because the ripple effect of the FFT is getting mixed up with the actual spectrum of the signal, and it's producing a variance which you could say is larger than it should be. So we can see experimentally that at a particular frequency, the variance does not necessarily decrease as the number of points increase. The variance here in the middle plot is much larger than the variance for the previous plot, because we just happen to fall on a point in the spectrum where we have a zero or a dip. So even though the shape of the overall spectrum seems to smooth somewhat, we still have this ripple effect because that's inherent with the FFT. So here we see experimentally that simply increasing the number of points does not necessarily get at the information we're interested in, which is the smooth spectral model. Yes?
Quick question.
Sure.
From slide 3, the plots on the right-hand side are spectral estimates of the white noise that are shown on the plot on the left, correct?
They're actually spectral estimates of the signal. This model, we're modeling the signal as, the signal is, in fact, white noise applied to a linear time invariant filter.
Okay.
So the signal...
I'm sorry, I was confused. I just thought it was of the white noise. I was wondering why there was a bias at the lower frequency.
Yeah, no, that's a good question. when we want to talk about parameter estimates and variances and biases in the literature, you'll see people resort to two things. One, they'll use sine waves and plus noise, or the other is they'll use autoregressive processes. Those are simply two ways we can know what the true spectrum should be, and then we can estimate how close our estimate of the spectrum is getting to the true parameters. So in this case, we have a noise-like signal, but it does have a model. Its model is this h of z is 1 over 1 minus 0.9 z minus 1. Okay? Does that make it any clearer?
I think so, thank you.
Okay. We actually, when we model speech signals, we use actually this kind of a model for unvoiced sounds, such as S's and SH's and SH and those kinds of F's. We use this kind of model. We actually code the voice as a process that looks very much like this equation that we're writing. But the true spectrum, as we'll see later, is actually the smooth line that sort of cuts through this noise on the lower right. So if we were to compute a linear predictive model of this data, we would get pretty close to we'd be able to estimate this 0.9 parameter fairly closely. So we can do a little bit of analytic work to gain some insight into the variance. Now, I'm going to skip some of the details of this derivation and derivations like this today, because these are, again, these derivations are kind of classical derivations. I don't think they're too relevant today, other than to have some intuition about the results. But 20, 30 years ago, this was where what research was working on, trying to understand the properties of these estimators. So what we're going to do is we're going to show through an existence proof that the variance does not decrease as a function of the number of data points. So the variance of this estimator R sub P of e to the j omega, the variance of the power spectrum estimated through the autocorrelation function, well, this can be written as the expectation of RP squared minus the expectation of, minus the expectation squared of R of P, R sub P. This is this is sort of a common way to estimate the variance in terms of the expectation of the square minus the square of the expectation. We've seen that before when we looked at covariance functions. Now, the second term is fairly easy to evaluate, because this is just the expectation squared of the Fourier transform of the autocorrelation function. And that is just going to be equal to the, for the model that we showed, that's just going to be equal to the power of the noise. Because the noise is essentially what's causing the deviation from the true value. So if you work through the details of that, the bias or the error in this expectation will just be equal to the variance of the noise. Now, the first term, the expectation of R squared, it's a bit more tedious to derive, but for a zero mean IID process, we can actually work that out to be a fairly compact representation. It's just tedious to derive this. You simply have to write the equations for the autocorrelations and square them, which leads to expressions that have four summations in them. It's kind of long, but just by grouping things and so forth, simplification, we can show that that expectation is equal to the variance in the noise, sigma sub w squared, times the quantity 2 plus the quantity 1 over m times sine omega m over sine omega squared. And this shouldn't be completely unexpected, because this term sine omega m over sine omega, this is actually the frequency response of a window, a rectangular window, if you remember from your DSP days. So this is just sort of this expression has two components to it. It has the variance related to the noise, which is what's causing the error in the first place, and it's got a variance related to the shape of the window. And fortunately, it turns out to be a fairly simple equation. So the overall variance of our estimate of the spectrum derived from the autocorrelation function, we have, just plugging these two results into our first equation for the variance, we have sigma sub w to the fourth power times 1 plus 1 over m sine omega m over sine omega squared. Now, this equation is significant because it tells us that as we take the limit as m goes to infinity, the variance of this estimate, not the estimate itself, remember, but the variance of the estimate, well, the limit of this expression as m goes to infinity, this second term goes to zero, but we're left with sigma sub w raised to the fourth power, which means that our estimate of the autocorrelation is not consistent. If to be consistent, the limit as m goes to infinity has to go to zero. But we see that for this estimate, the variance of the estimate in the limit converges to the noise power. Now that essentially means we're not averaging out the noise. And that's not unexpected, because this estimate was essentially constructed by simply taking one window of the signal and taking its Fourier transform. Therefore, we're not doing anything in this operation to reduce the effects of noise. So if the signal, if you have noise embedded in your signal, well, you're going to have to do some form of averaging to get that noise out, or your estimate is always going to contain in the limit elements of the noise. So the traditional periodogram analysis of estimate is not, it's asymptotically unbiased, which means the error goes to zero, but the variance is not does not go to zero, and therefore it's, so we call that not being not consistent. So it's asymptotically unbiased, but it is not consistent. So when people observe this, the solution sort of became clear. To make this thing go to zero, we're going to have to do some form of averaging to get rid of the noise. So let's talk a little bit about that. We can generalize this result that we showed by calculating the covariance of the periodogram for two frequencies. Again, this is an analysis that's in the book. I think the result is significant, but the details are perhaps not worth spending too much time on. But we can write an expression for the covariance of any two frequencies in the autocorrelation derived spectrum. And we can actually write that covariance in terms of the autocorrelation value squared minus the square of the values. And this, since we have two, you can think of these as two random variables, we essentially have a cross correlation minus the means of each one of the variables. So this is sort of sigma xy minus sigma mu x times mu y, which again is a fairly standard decomposition of the covariance that we've shown previously. For white input signals, the covariance between adjacent frequencies is zero, which is bad. If the signal, for example, is white noise and you're trying to estimate its spectrum, the covariance between adjacent frequencies, this term you can actually show is equal to zero. Now, at first you might say, well, that's a good thing. But think about what that means. That means that there's these two values are independent of one another. They can fluctuate randomly. And that's actually what you see if you've ever taken white noise and you compute one spectrum and you compute another spectrum at a different point in time and you compare those two spectra. The actual values of the spectra seem to be somewhat random, centered about some true value, but nevertheless, the deviations in these values kind of are random. So this is a bad thing because this means as m increases, the covariance remains zero, which means that the variance does not decrease. And we sort of saw an example of that in the previous slides. Now, if we continue along this path, if we take a signal which is generated by passing zero mean IID sequence through a linear time invariant system, that's like the example we described previously where you have noise, you have a linear filter, and you look at the spectrum of the output of that filter, we can show that the variance of the autocorrelation derived spectrum for the output signal is equal to the variance of, is equal to the autocorrelation squared of that signal. So the limit as m goes to infinity of the variance of that's derived by taking the periodogram of the output signal is equal to the autocorrelation function of the signal squared, the true value. Now, we don't know what this is because we don't really know what the true value of the signal is, but this is just showing us that the limit of the periodogram of the output of this system, which is zero mean IID noise applied to a linear filter, does not go to zero. So the variance of the periodogram estimate is proportional to the square of the true spectrum. So once again, we observe that the variance does not decay with increasing m, confirming the fact that the periodogram is not a consistent estimator. So these observations led researchers to develop parametric techniques that were asymptotically consistent, things like linear prediction. And these techniques became known as high-resolution spectral estimates because they were able to do better, if you will, in terms of variance than the traditional estimates. They also led to ways to precondition the data so that the periodogram would be consistent or at least more accurate. And we'll talk about that in a moment when we talk about time domain windowing. This is really what led to the development of time domain windowing. It must have been a long night yesterday because we're losing the front row here. So the Bartlett, let's talk a little bit about the Bartlett window, which comes about by because we've observed this bias. If we recall our expression for the bias in the autocorrelation estimate, we had that the spectrum derived from the autocorrelation function is just the Fourier transform of the autocorrelation sequence. And the expectation of the autocorrelation sequence had a bias which was equal to proportional to capital M minus small m over m times R of m. And the expectation of the spectral estimate derived from R prime of m, that can also be written as the sum of the expectations of R prime of m, and if we substitute in our expression for the expectation of R prime of m, we can write that the expectation of the spectrum derived from the autocorrelation sequence is equal to the sum from m is equal to minus m minus 1 to plus m minus 1 of this bias term m minus the absolute value of m, capital M minus the absolute value of m over m times R of m times e to the minus j omega n. Now this observation gave rise to what is really called now time domain windowing. We can think of this, we can think of the expectation of R prime of m as simply being a weighted version of R of m. So we can write this expectation as a windowing process. We can write this as the sum from m is equal to minus infinity to plus infinity of some window w sub b of m times the true autocorrelation r of m times e to the minus j omega n, where this w sub b of m is just a time domain window, which is non-zero for m less than capital M and 0 elsewhere. This is a triangularly shaped window. This is known as the triangular or the Bartlett window, and this is very commonly used in digital signal processing when you talk about the use of time domain windows, whether we're estimating autocorrelation functions, whether we're estimating spectra. You know from your DSP classes that you tend to use windows which amplify the center elements in the window and de-emphasize the values close to the edges of the window. And this is one of the reasons why. Now, we also know, now we begin to see where the bias comes from. We know that the impact on the spectrum of this windowing process is simply a convolution. This is a multiplication in the time domain, which means in the frequency domain, this is going to be a convolution. And the impact on the spectrum is a convolution of the signal, of the spectrum of the window, and the frequency response. Is a convolution of the spectrum of the signal, the true spectrum, which would be RB of J omega, and the frequency response of the window. Now, for a rectangular window, we know the frequency response has this form of sine omega m over 2 over sine omega over 2. And since we're dealing with the power spectrum, we just have that squared. So, this shows that when we take a finite chunk of data and we compute the correlation function, and then we compute the spectrum from that correlation function, the spectrum is essentially smeared because we have the convolution of the spectrum of the signal and the convolution of the frequency response of our window. Now, how would you characterize this frequency response? Would you call this a low-pass filter or a high-pass filter? These tend to be low-pass filters. And what happens, and what their general shape is like a sinc function, right? So they have what we call a main lobe, and then they have the side lobes. So this gives rise to the whole concept of time domain windowing and the design of time domain windows. And if you recall from your DSP days, the goal in designing the windows was to try to flatten the main lobe and decrease the side lobes. So as you increase the length of the window, what happens to the frequency response of the window? As you increase the length of the window, what happens to the frequency response of the window? And what does it converge to in the limit is the real question. So this window is corrupting your estimate of the spectrum because the convolution of the frequency response of the window and the convolution of with the signal spectrum, it's going to smear the spectrum. But if you remember from your DSP days, we then try to find windows which have desirable frequency response properties. As you increase M, this function will converge to an impulse function, which means when you do this convolution, you'll get back the original signal. So the challenge in windowing is for a given number of samples, is to try to make the main lobe as flat as possible and as narrow as possible, and to make the side lobes as low as possible. But that's sort of a conflicting problem, because for a given length, you can't really change those independently. So we look at the shapes of the windows. We look at things other than triangular shapes to try to give the main lobe a flatter frequency response, or to try to make the main lobe narrower for a given length. And that whole topic is known as the design of these window functions. And as you know, there's probably a dozen common window shapes that people use depending on the applications. Things like Hamming windows, Hanning windows, Gaussian windows, Kaiser windows, etc. And this is really where all that comes from, is the observation that the using a finite set of samples, M, is going to essentially produce a problem with the variance of your spectral estimate. And then the design, these windows are designed in a way to minimize the variance of this estimate. So the modified periodogram, for these reasons, it is common to use a time domain window with the periodogram, and we can write an expression for that as the magnitude squared of the window times the signal, and then take the Fourier transform of that. And this is what you've been doing probably in DSP for quite a while now. The author introduces this constant C, but in fact what we really do in DSP is we just design the window so that C is equal to 1 by normalizing it to have unit energy. And we can actually show that this is equivalent to viewing the windowed autocorrelation, the spectral estimate derived from the windowed signal as being equal to this R double, the Fourier transform of a function we'll call R double primed of M. And R double primed of M is just the windowed signal times the windowed delayed signal. So we can write the spectrum in terms of the windowed signal, and we can actually derive a bias for the spectrum based on that. And if we go through that analysis, we can show that the expectation of the autocorrelation spectrum derived from the windowed signal, we can show that that's going to be equal to the sum from minus quantity m minus 1 to plus m minus 1 of the true autocorrelation function R of m times a weighting function g of m times e to the minus j omega n, where the weighting function g of m is equal to 1 over m c times the sum from n is equal to 0 to m capital M minus absolute value of m minus 1 times w d of n times w d of n plus m. So what this is really saying is that the bias in the spectrum is proportional to the expectation of the window-derived spectrum is pretty close to the true spectrum, except it's influenced by the autocorrelation of the window. That's essentially what this equation says. And and therefore, the extent to which you can make this function a delta function, the better, but in fact, we can't really do that. So the shape of the window function becomes important. And this is why, rather than using rectangular windows, you try to use window functions which are more concentrated around zero, which look more like delta functions, because that's a way to minimize the effect of this autocorrelation weight on the bias. So this is another way of showing us that the more the window corrupts our estimate of the spectrum. And this has been known for many, many years in DSP. We like to use windows because they mitigate what are called edge effects when you're doing frame-based processing. But we also know that in using the window, we're actually corrupting our estimate of the spectrum. We're making our estimate biased. So it's a trade-off between mitigating these edge effects and bias in the estimate. We can go through a similar analysis to show that the variance of our estimate of the spectrum derived from the windowed signal is proportional to the square of the true spectrum. And again, we have this problem that the variance of our estimate of the spectrum derived from the windowed signal does not go to zero as the length of the window increases. So again, we have an estimator which is not consistent, even though now we're using a window. So that's a continuing theme. And what we'll look at next is a way to make this variance go to zero and become a, and make this estimator consistent. And we're going to have to do that through averaging. Now, there's another sort of aspect of this which is not discussed in the book, and I wanted to just sort of sketch that, but I'm not sure if I can get this thing. What do I have to do to activate the sketch pad? Can I just write on this?
Yeah, should work. Or you can actually write on the board if you want to.
It might be better if I write on this, but do I have to press some button here? Like that. About this is if we have a, if we take the Fourier transform of a window function, it looks something like this. We have positive and negative Bowen frequency components. And if we convolve this with some signal, what's going to happen is there's going to be an additional corruption of our spectral estimate due to the fact that due to the way that these tails overlap. And this is another reason why you try to make the window function as narrow as possible, because you want to minimize the amount of crosstalk that comes from the tails of the window function. So when you look at the implications of windowing in the time domain, and typically typically this is done in the context of sine waves. So if we talk about the spectrum of a sine wave and we talk about a window function and we convolve these two, what we get is a spectrum which looks like this. And the error that's introduced in our estimate of the sine wave spectrum is a result of not only the window function, but the overlap between the positive and negative Bowen frequency components of the window function. And this is why you try to design the window functions so that it's as narrow as possible, so that you minimize the amount of energy of the tails that interfere with your true estimate of the spectrum. So we know that when we introduce a window function, we're smearing the spectrum. And in fact, if you try to estimate the frequency of this sine wave as the peak in this spectrum, and then you look at things like the bias of that estimate, the expectation of your estimate, and the variance of that estimate, you'll see the same kind of behavior we've discussed, that the window functions do not make the window functions actually introduce bias and variance into the estimate, because they're smearing the spectrum. So that's another way to think about what's happening with some of these equations that we talk about. But one way or the other, what you walk away with is this concept that windowing the signal is not necessarily a good thing because it's smearing the spectrum. This is another reason why people became very interested in linear prediction-based spectra, because the thinking was that if you estimate a parametric model, you don't suffer from this spectral smearing effect of the windows. Ironically, though, to estimate the linear prediction model, we still need an estimate of the autocorrelation function. And that estimate of the autocorrelation function comes from a windowed version of the autocorrelation function. So even in a linear prediction estimate, we're applying a window to the signal to get the autocorrelation estimate. So it's not really true that these high-resolution spectral estimators are free of the windowing problems. They're still using a windowed estimate of the autocorrelation function. And for that reason, people began to become interested in ways we could improve the periodogram. And the most common way to do that is a very simple technique that we discussed sort of extensively in pattern recognition, which is to simply smooth the estimates of the periodogram by averaging. And this is an interesting approach, because it's somewhat counterintuitive. Rather than simply taking all the data and computing one estimate, this says, let's take the data and break it up into subframes, compute estimates of the spectrum from each one of those subframes, and then average together those subframes to get the final estimate. So we can write an expression for the signal, which is simply just a way of saying that we're going to break the signal up into L frames, each frame being K samples long. And in this derivation, the windows are non-overlapping, though obviously you can make them overlapping as well. And in fact, that it's preferred to make them overlapping. We can then write an equation for the periodogram, which as a function of these windows, or these subframes. So we have the I think I got this backwards. There's K windows, and each of the windows is L samples long. So we have each one of these subframes, we have the autocorrelation estimate based on L samples, and then the overall spectrum is going to be estimated as the average of these K individual autocorrelation-based spectral estimates. And this estimate is known as Bartlett's estimate. This estimate has a bias which you can show is proportional to 1 over M times divided by L. So the expectation of this average autocorrelation, this estimate of the average spectrum, which is the average of the spectrum derived from these smaller autocorrelation functions, that expectation is the sum of, can be shown to be equal to the sum of the Fourier transform of the true autocorrelation function, which is the right answer, except that it's weighted by a term proportional to the lag and proportional to the number of samples in the window. Okay, so that still means that when you compute the spectrum this way, you don't get the true result, you're still off by a little bit. But again, we can pre-weight the signal to make this go away, or we can simply observe that as L goes to infinity, as the window becomes bigger and bigger, this estimate goes to zero, so it's asymptotically unbiased. The more important result is that we can show that the variance of this estimate is proportional to 1 over k times the variance of the periodogram, which means as we increase the number of windows that we average, the variance goes to zero. And hence, this is a consistent estimate because the variance decreases monotonically as the number of averages increases. And that's one reason, for example, why rather than use non-overlapping windows, you might want to actually use overlapping windows. So you can take for your M data points, you can get more averages within that M, that window of M data points. So this is a nice justification for computing a spectral estimate by averaging successive windows of data. Now, the story just doesn't end here, unfortunately. Because in many real-world applications, like voice processing, the signal is, in fact, changing over time. So this averaging process doesn't always work if your signal is changing. Similarly, in many real applications, you have non-stationary noise. So the longer your interval over which you're averaging, the more likely you are to see a noise burst. And that noise burst then is going to corrupt your estimate. So this is a nice result if you're trying to detect things like sine waves and noise, deterministic signals and noise, or stationary signals like AR processes and such. But for non-stationary or time-varying signals, this isn't as useful to us as it might seem because the signal itself is changing over the analysis interval, and there's not much we can do about that. Now, the last topic I wanted to talk about today, which is related to this, is known as the Blackman-Tukey spectral estimation process. We can generalize the notion of windowing and write that the Blackman-Tukey estimate of the spectrum is going to be the Fourier transform of our estimate of the autocorrelation function times some window function. The window W sub L of N is a symmetric data window of length 2 times M1 minus 1. And the autocorrelation estimate, R primed of M, is just our traditional window-based autocorrelation estimate. This estimate is known as the Blackman-Tukey estimate or the correlogram. And when the window is rectangular, this is equivalent to the raw periodogram. The window function is designed to be symmetric so that the Blackman-Tukey estimate is a real and even function, because we need the spectrum to be a real and even function, the magnitude spectrum. So, as before, we can see the impact of windowing is simply related to this convolution of the periodogram estimate and the frequency response of the window. So this led to people postulating optimal window functions that attempt to minimize the difference between the Blackman-Tukey estimate of the spectrum and the true estimate of the spectrum, which would just be the Fourier transform of the true autocorrelation function. And you might ask questions like, for a given window length, what is the best I can do in terms of minimizing the bias and minimizing the variance? And that's actually a question that Kaiser asked and derived a window function, which you could say is sort of optimal, because it attempts to, for a given length, it attempts to essentially minimize this bias and variance. The bias of the Blackman-Tukey estimate can be shown to be proportional to the integral of the true spectrum and the convolution of that with the window function. So the bias of the Blackman-Tukey estimate is proportional to the integral of the window function convolved with the true estimate. So that gives you some idea of how the window function plays into the expectation of the Blackman-Tukey estimate. And if, for example, the window function is an impulse function, which would be ideal, we get back, you can see that we get back the actual spectrum and the bias is zero. But of course, we know the window functions are not an impulse function. They're shaped more like a sync function. So this gives you some way to compute the bias in terms of the frequency response of the window. The variance of the window, the variance of the Black-Minkowski estimate is proportional to the true autocorrelation squared times a term which is proportional to the energy of the window. And the good news here is that the variance of the Black-Minkowski estimate is proportional to 1 over m, where m is the length of the window, so that as m goes to infinity, this variance does go to zero, and therefore the Black-Minkowski estimate is a consistent estimator. So this is nothing new, really. I mean, you're used to dealing with windows and using windows to estimate spectrum, but I mentioned it in this framework because you may, in the literature, see people refer to the Black-Minkowski spectral estimation process, and that's really all it is. You'll also see people use this term parallelogram, which again is just not something that much different than things you've seen before. Now, the there are actually estimators that go beyond the things we've discussed today. If you think about what we've talked about, we're really talking about a method for computing a spectrum by averaging overlapping windows. So this the visualization that results from this process is actually what we call a spectrogram. A spectrogram is a display where you have time, you have frequency, and you have intensity. And this process of computing a smoothed estimate by sliding the window essentially generates this spectrogram. And then the averaging process says to simply just go through and average all the adjacent spectra. So we can visualize this using something known as a spectrogram, which again, if you've taken the DSP course, I hope that was discussed. If not, I can point you to some notes I have on this. We use spectrograms quite a lot in audio processing. But there are other visualizations like a spectrogram that use correlation-like functions that attempt to model higher-order statistics of the signal. And there's one of the more common in this area is something called a Wigner distribution, which is sort of a way to deal, to extend the concept of autocorrelation to non-stationary signals. So periodograms and correlograms, these are techniques that are applied to Gaussian noise type processes where you have just first and second moments being non-zero. And then there are techniques like this that you can apply to higher order statistics, to signals with higher information in their higher order statistics. So what we've done today is to introduce the periodogram, talk about Bartlett windowing, and how the concept. I think the most important thing we talked about today was this process of smoothing the periodogram by averaging the spectra of adjacent windows. You may have seen people doing this in practice, and now you have some exposure to the theory that motivates this. And then we sort of ended up by talking about the Black-Minkowski approach, which is simply viewing this process of estimating the spectrum as a windowing process. And we saw that the bias and variance are proportional to the length of the window and the shape of the window. And that's why there are many different window functions that all claim to have some benefit in terms of bias and variance. So I think with that, we'll wrap this lecture up. So the next lecture, we're going to begin to talk about parametric spectral estimates. And I'm hoping that we can finish. So it looks like we're pretty much on schedule to try to finish the first 8 chapters by the midterm, which is coming up about the midterm's on, I think, October 9th or something like that. And then we can spend the second half of the class looking at more of the statistical techniques.
Okay.
See you on Thursday.